Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barbon, and I'm with Brad Pilon, and this is going to be a weekly podcast where we'll just discuss issues that we come across and how we can fit the science of health and fitness and, I guess, diet together into your life in a way that it might make sense. So today we're going to be covering a concept that Brad brought up and that we talk about a lot, and that's assuming mechanisms. So the idea that when you see something happen, that you assume how it happened. It's okay. I mean, there's a lot of things in your life where you're going to notice, you know, just how something might actually happen, but you may not know exactly how it happens. And that's where a lot of clutter and confusion can come in, and especially in the diet and fitness industry. This happens all the time. Like, people will, you know, you'll see on a blog or in a magazine or on a website, someone has a transformation, and when you hear about how they did it, it could be a lot more cumbersome than it needed to be for, you know, for example, with different diet styles. So, I mean, Brad brought this up, and I guess we were going to talk about the different ways that people assume mechanism and end up getting themselves wasting a lot of time and money and effort, you know, on all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, totally. The whole concept behind this kind of thing is confusing the what with the how with the why, right? And when you overemphasize the how and the why, it's just mind clutter. It's just adding more and more mind clutter to, you know, what you're trying to think about, what you're trying to worry about. And a lot of times the how and why is just, it's really just people opining on things, right? Like, it's almost guessing, trying to make sense of what happened, what worked. And a lot of times it's piecemeal of other people's how and whys being put together to make your own little how and whys. So, like you said, weight loss is a prime example, right? People lose weight because they ate less and they typically worked out more. No matter what weight loss program you're on, to some degree you ate less and worked out more. But that's not a really interesting blog post, so people have to fill up, you know, a story about how they lost weight with their idea of how eating less or how working out more works. Right, so it's the how and the why. You know, just this leading cause of nutrition mind clutter, I think.
Yeah, totally. Well, I mean, think of all the different I mean, that's basically messing up the mechanism of how weight loss works is the prime motivating factor for every new diet book that comes out.
Yeah, and it's not just messing up the mechanism, right? Because as you and I know, it's the way your physiology metabolism works, it's much like a spider web. So there isn't just typically one mechanism. There's a lot of redundant things going on at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, I get what. Well, yeah, you're right.
They like the best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not seeing the whole picture, and it's just trying to tell somebody a more cumbersome story. Well, I mean, it's the whole. Anybody's, like you said, anyone who's lost weight obviously ate less, but explaining to somebody that it was anything besides that is where the what and the why gets messed up. Like, we already saw what happened. There was weight loss. Why it happened is where all of these different diet books try to sell you a different story or a different theory. And then if you get too caught up in that story, you may think that that's actually what was doing it. And then if you stop eating less, but you're still doing whatever, you know, the story was, low carb or whatever it was, then you're wondering what's wrong. And then that's when you get in this cycle of bouncing from one diet to the next, because you're not doing what actually worked. You're just bouncing from all of these incorrect why it works stories.
Exactly. And, well, the interesting one is, if you think, if you consider the mistake of the how, is when people actually start with the mechanism, and they're probably thinking about insulin, growth hormone, leptin, something like that. But if the really interesting one is they start confusing or making up the why it works. And that's when they actually personify the human body, right? And they start talking about, and I'm sure you've seen this 100 times, is they actually start talking about the decisions your body made. You know, like when it gets confused because you're not eating enough, so it goes in starvation mode. It's not even a mechanistic-based thing. It's literally giving your body its own little personality where it makes decisions under your best interest. And that's when things get really confusing, because now you're explaining away the what happened with your how, and then explaining away the how, you're using a why, right? And it just gets really, really confusing. And the problem is that you lose good advices, or even good messages, by giving very loose how and whys that are open for debate, right? So a great example is the idea that, you know, you should eat healthy food, right? It's a pretty decent what, right? Like, just the advice is eat healthy food. But then when you add a how in, like this one here, We can eat more than we need because our body is craving nutrients. In the West, which typically means North America, the majority of people eat a lot of empty food, so fill your stomach with empty calories. So you will still want to eat, as your body may be full, but it is still not getting the nutrition it needs. So it will send a signal to your brain that you need more and more food because what you're actually looking for is micronutrients. In the East, this doesn't happen because they eat healthier. Right? So the general message there is actually a really good message, which is, you know, by and large, if you're trying to lose weight, if you eat healthier food, there's some sort of benefit, right? And there's lots of debating going on, but in general, it's not a hurtful message. But the problem is you threw in that how it works, right? How that actually helps to curb hunger, which is a very, very loose theory that, you know, he probably heard from someone else making up a how and why, who heard it from someone else making up a how and why. In reality, you can punch holes through this very quickly just by looking at the research of Brian Wanson, like really simple stuff without even going too deep. So his message gets lost, which was a good message because he completely made up a how and why, or provided a made-up how and why. It may not have even been his, right? We can't blame him necessarily, but that's what happens.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, and that happens in multiple cases. And then applying the story of the messed up how or why can get all can cause – you're not going to get the results you're looking for if you're applying the wrong – story on how it works or why it works, and
exactly.
and that's also when people start wondering, and that's how you lead to the next one, because you have seen either yourself has had some results at one point or somebody else has, but you're listening to the wrong why it works and how it works, and
yes.
since and then all of a sudden they don't add up anymore, and now you're looking for the next one and then the next one, and hence the reason why people can go from completely contradictory diets, so they can go from a low carb to a low fat, and then, well, it's neither that. Now it must have something to do with protein. Well, wait a minute, it's a different kind of protein. And then from there, well, blood type has to have something to do with it. And then it's not just low carb, it's the glycemic index of the carbs. And this is constantly messing up the how and the why. And
yeah.
And that's, next year, this year, 2010, there'll be 20 new books, 20 new diet revolution breakthrough books that mess up the how and
maybe.
What's that?
In the first month.
And they're going to mess up the how and the why again and again and again. And then that's just how this industry works.
Right. So, I mean, the main thing to do, I mean, with the whole philosophy of PhyLife being kind of fitting everything together and keeping things as simple as possible, but not any simpler, the main goal is to just identify information collected in your life that is not needed or that is actually hurtful. And in the case of nutrition, health, and fitness, it's typically the how and why that are the clutter that can actually be hurtful. Because you can get a good idea, and but if you give the wrong mechanism behind how it works, then you open up to people to simply go, well, that mechanism is wrong, therefore that advice is wrong. So the advice could have been sound. It could have actually been a good thing for you to do, but you set it up by giving just a really loose definition of how and why it works, aligning yourself up to get that idea shot down very easily. So typically, if you're reporting, and it's in the reporting that typically starts. So if you're a reporter in magazines or even newspapers, this is where you have to be really careful that, you know, you're not just expanding on the how and why, but simply to add words to your article when that's the weak spot of your article. So you start off giving really good advice to people, and then you throw in, you know, one or two empty how and whys that are just sort of commonsensical or things you've heard. It destroys your whole article. And then you started off trying to do, which was help people, you end up just hurting them by adding just information clutter to their lives that's actually not factual. You're giving them more things to worry about when they didn't need to even think about it in the first place. So it's confusing the how and why.
Yeah, and I think this is where OCE comes from, too.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, like the, if for anyone who doesn't know what we mean, OCE is obsessive compulsive eating. And that's where, I mean, you can just stack another rule on top of another rule, and it seems like it's linear. It goes only one direction, and it's just addition. It seems like no one can stop and think, maybe there's too many rules here, and maybe I have to back up. Most people, I think's first thought is to add the new rule. So there, so like I was saying before, it's like, you know, low carb. Oh, it's not just low carb; it's the type of low carb. And then, oh, it's not just lower fat. It's like it's higher. It's a higher protein, but it's actually a specific kind of and then it's a specific kind. It's always like more. It's never. Mm-hmm. It's always another rule. Never less rules. And I think that's like people get that messed up with the idea of more makes sense in like the rest of your life. Like as you get older, you like you're bigger, so you're taller, your clothes are bigger. You hopefully are going to make more money. You have more education. You have like there's lots of things that are more. Like you go from a starter house to a bigger house. You go from maybe a smaller car to a bigger car. Everything seems to scale up, and then the one place where that doesn't really work all that well is food, nutrition, eating, whatever you want to call it. You don't want to scale up how much food you eat. Actually, it's the one thing that goes in the complete reverse direction as you get older. You need less. And,
exactly.
And not only you need less food, you need less food information. You don't need to keep learning about it. You just need to pare back how much of this food information.
And that's the issue, because what you're learning, I mean, when you become OCE and you're really obsessive compulsive about how you're eating, you're naturally going to the internet, into books, et cetera. Very few people develop a hobby interest in nutrition and then decide to, enroll in grad school or do graduate studies. They go to blogs, they go to websites where they're finding lots of how and why that are really just opinion-based or not even opinion-based, but just sort of, again, that same personifying in the body, this is what the body is thinking, therefore this is what it would do type of info. And since you're not getting any good info, exactly like you said, you start piling information on top of itself, and that's when you become really obsessive compulsive, worrying about every little bit of your how you eat and why you eat and what you're eating and what the ramifications of that are. So yeah, so how and what? How, what, why? And confusing them or overcomplicating them definitely leads to OCE.
Yeah, and then I can see how people just fall into the default mode if there's one more piece of information. It's kind of like you knew this a while. You knew how this worked ages ago before you started reading about nutrition, and then you sort of undid it all on yourself or you wound yourself up too tight by reading all of this stuff, and now you have to sort of undo it and go back to the basics. And I can see how that gets difficult, because everywhere people look, there's always like a new piece of information. The whole another thing came out in the paper, another thing came out in the news, and it's hard to go the other direction. Like some people, this whole concept of calories in, calories out, and kind of getting to the basic of eating and eating for weight loss, and it just making it that simple. Like some people have referred to it as a leap of faith to believe that, and I can't believe it's gotten to the point where the most basic fundamental concept of energy balance, someone actually referred to it as a leap. Like if you look in physiology textbooks, that's just what it is. Like gaining weight is energy excess, and losing weight's energy is being in a deficit. Like that's been understood for a long time, but it's boring, and there's right, exactly. But so it's amazing that people who don't study that, and I'm not saying anyone should, but for the people who don't study it, but they're actually searching for information, that's not a fundamental piece of information you sort of ever have drilled into you. You have all of these sort of erroneous what and whys, but or how and whys, and you never get the one that actually is accurate. And
imagine what a diet book would be like if the advice is just eat less. And the five-page book explaining eat less and maybe a bit of the reasons behind it, but if you don't include some really awesome new hows and whys, A, you're not getting your book published, and B, no one's going to be interested. I mean, the top books today have a cult-like following of mass appeal, because it was they're written by writers, not scientists typically, and they're very heavy on the how and why, explaining away in a new way of explaining what happens, right? So it all comes down to the more OCE your book, and the more easy it is to follow the how and why while being very – almost like a plot twist, right? Your how and why find why diet works. Have to read almost like a Born Identity type movie, right? Plot twists and people you thought were bad guys or good guys and surprising things that your body does. It has to read like that to be a bestseller. So you should automatically look at any diet book that's 500, 600 pages long and a bestseller and go – that's probably an amazing read. It's probably captivating because it's probably written by, a very, very advanced writer, which means that writer probably got some sort of advance in money because he pitched the how and why behind the story. So you're automatically dedicated to creating an amazing how and why, trying to explain away the what really happened, right? So you're getting a piece of creative literary art, but not necessarily science, right? Otherwise every book would be the same. So the how and why is what we're all dependent on. It's what fuels blogs. Well, it even fuels Twitter, right? I mean, I get him constantly on my Twitter account trying to disprove the idea of calories mattering at all. And it's always just the same thing. It's how and why people are opining on things rather than providing hard evidence. So it's something you really have to watch for, and not just nutrition. I mean, when it comes to exercise, training, even medicine and health, right? The how and why is often the part that's the weakest in the explanation, but the most romanticized, right? So you got to always go, okay, what am I being told, what versus the how and why? And that's how you sort out nutrition clutter and information clutter in your life.
Oh, yeah. And the whole medicine thing is people have, like, I think people are inherently problem solvers by nature, and they want to, you know, if they see something happen, they want to fill in the gaps as to how it happened. Like, what mm-hmm. like, you know, how did – you know, this person healed. How did that happen? Well, it must have been spirits, or it must be, you know, before we knew of the germ theory of disease in modern medicine, some of it.
Toxic blood.
Pardon me?
Right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Germ theory was just toxic blood.
Yeah, yeah. It was like there was toxins in your blood. Like bloodletting. They would just cut people open and let the blood pour out, thinking that the bad stuff would come out. Like, think how ridiculous that was. Because they didn't know what was going on. They didn't know that, you know, maybe the immune system just, you know, eventually healed stuff and that's how you got better. So they're not really sure what's going on. Like, sometimes they would drill holes in people's heads to let the spirits out. So they didn't know what was going on, but people have this insatiable need to explain things. Like, people, one of the core fundamental needs people have is a rational explanation for things. They just have to come up with an explanation, even though it may seem ridiculous to us now. Back then, they're like, well, I don't know what happened. It must have been the spirits, or I don't know what happened, but it must have been toxins in the blood. Or whatever.
So right, then a question for you would be, for people listening, how do we help them, you know, easily pick out hows and whys that aren't really the science of what is happening, but more opinion and myth? I know the number one for me is when people start personifying the body and talking about decisions the body makes, it's typically the language used for explaining starvation mode. That, for me, is always a big hint, right? When they start kind of explaining it as decisions the personality of your body makes. But what else can we help them look for?
Oh, I see what you're saying, the toolbox of how to look for suspicious hows and whys. Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the naturalistic fallacy. Like, when people are talking about the body or your body as something separate of you, that's a bit false. Like, whatever you are, you're the parts of your body. Like, your mind is, you know, part of your brain, and your brain's linked to your body, and, you know, all of it's one big piece. So talking about tricking your body or confusing it, like confusion training, and that's a sign to me. There is no shocking the body. There's no tricking it, because all the compartments of the body are measurable, and that's what the scientific fields of research are doing. They're measuring all these parts. So when you say, you know, you're tricking your body into storing fat, no, well, what do you mean? And if you actually drill down to it, you can actually measure all the pieces of the body that are doing whatever it is that they're doing at that time. So there's no mystery, and there's no trick to how the body's working. It's so the personification thing, for sure. There's not like two disembodied spirits floating around in your body, like you and your body. There's just you, and we can measure quite a bit of you right now.
Right. I think another one is to look for things that are obvious examples of the contrary. And and then people are going to hate me for this, but I'm going to use a specific branch of paleo people. And then this isn't an anti-paleo thing. You know, John and I both have lots of friends who eat paleo, but there is a branch of people in the paleo world. These are people who eat predominantly as they think our caveman ancestors would have ate, but who believe it's impossible to lose body fat without while eating carbs. Right? And naturally, this is a very, very, very small minority of this group who think this. But for that group, if you hear that dogma that, you know, it's impossible to eat carbs and lose fat, you can think to yourself, you know, are there examples I know of around the world of people who have successfully lost weight while still eating carbs? And if the answer is yes, then you go, okay, well, then, okay, they're confusing the how, whys, and what, or they're making up or opining on them. So that's another one, is that you can think of just a rational example of when maybe the contrary happened, or maybe this wasn't true. It's a good way to really quickly weed through this stuff as well.
Yeah, that's just the basic rule of scientific method, a testable and falsifiable hypothesis. So if you
exactly
yeah, so whatever the claim is there a situation where the what, in this case the weight loss, did it happen without that thing happening? And of course it did. Every year, new weight loss books come out with a new theory. So, but does that mean nobody in all of the years before have ever lost weight without knowing this new
right?
Well, of course they have. So that means people from decades ago and decades from now are all going to be – some one thing is something, some consistent thing is what's causing them to lose weight. And, I mean,
right.
we kind of already know what it is. And like Brad said, it's you got to try to sell the story in a more interesting package. So,
right.
I mean, that's easy. It's easy to falsify a claim by just looking around for other people. And that's something – you got to catch yourself. And I know we've done this in the past. If you're focusing too much on one way that these things work and one kind of idea or fad, and then if you have to rationalize why other ways don't work, if you're in the rationalization mode, that's kind of your key that you're already probably have a thought that's not complete or doesn't have all the information, because just the act of trying to rationalize something that, I mean, rationalization by its definition means you already know that it can't possibly be true.
Yeah, well, it's like when we talked about explaining away the details, right?
Yeah.
You just sort of explain them away and try to make rational explanations why, okay, it doesn't apply in this case, and that's when you know your story is maybe not as strong as you thought. The way you said that brought up another point in my head, which was basically if you take a master, the story revolves around a master controller or a master leader. And I think to some extent, in the first edition of Beast Off Eat, we may have been even slightly guilty of this one ourselves, but if you take one hormone in the body and say it's the cause of everything, now excluding if you're talking about something like diabetes where you know there's an intimate relationship with insulin, but in most cases, if you pick just one hormone, you're going to be missing the big picture. And it's especially even in research studies, if just because they only measured one hormone doesn't mean other hormones were changing or at play. So you can also tell a story maybe too heavy on the hows and whys if they're concentrating on one very small piece of your physiology and metabolism. It's all connected, right? So a great example is your insulin can be at levels close to zero in your body. We're talking like almost no insulin in your blood at all. And you still won't be releasing fat from your fat cells unless growth hormone is also elevated. So if you have insulin at almost zero levels, so with no growth hormone present, fat's not released. So it's something that people don't consider, right? Is that there's lots of hormones in play. We're literally discovering new hormones, seems like, every week. I'm sure there's dozens we're unaware of, if not hundreds. So there's so many things that interact and play together, but if we're just simply picking one as the culprit or the hero, then you can tell it's more of a romanticized story. You know, they're trying to build up a really cool piece of literature around a story rather than giving you sort of cold, hard facts. So that's another one to look for.
Right, and that's because they don't just have one hormone, one effect. It's one hormone that affects a bunch of other hormones that affects a bunch of systems, and it's all in concert. It's never just one item, one effect. And that's if there was such thing as like one hormone, one effect, the medical community would have isolated that thing, packaged it, and be selling it. Sorry, not the medical, the pharmaceutical community would have that.
Yep.
Would have that wrapped up in a second. Like anytime there's even a chance, and there are certain cases where certain hormones or certain, chemicals in the body seem to, even though all of them have some redundancy and some breadth of effect, you can kind of isolate things and capture most of the one effect you want, and deal with the side effect. I mean, that's the reason there's such thing as side effects. All that is pointing out that the one effect you're after.
The other effect that drug or hormone.
Yeah. That one thing has 10 effects. The one effect you're after is the one that you're willing to, you're willing to put up with the side effects to get the one effect you want. So, I mean, there's
– exactly.
That's the point of – I mean, they're trying. They're trying to do things that don't have side effects, but they can't because it nothing in the body just does one thing. They all do multiple things. And now,
growth hormone is a prime example of that, right? It's
sure.
responsible for linear growth in children. And then – but, oh, by the way, it is also responsible for at least the fat release part of fat being released in your fat cells. It seems to play some sort of role in skeletal muscle growth as well as other lean mass growth. So it plays this like massive role in tons of different things. And then you and I saw research at that, remember that anti-aging conference? And I forget her name. that one research you read, the amazing research on growth hormone, showed
right,
that
yeah, yeah.
either ends of the spectrum,
Holly.
Either too much. Holly, yeah, Holly. Holly, the New Jersey Devils fan. You knew Zach Freeze and those guys. She showed that at too much or too little, there is negative effects of growth hormone. So you can't have too much, you can't have too little. And they both had weird effects on the mice's age and lifespan, right? So not only do things have a multiple number of effects, but those effects are only, you know, happening within an optimal zone. So there are such things as sort of master hormones. So insulin when you're fat and growth hormone when you're fasted, but they never work alone. And that's the key thing is if you're getting the impression that the hormone is just sort of working on its own and it was this amazing discovery, chances are that's because the publisher or the person behind the author did a little bit of market research and realized that hormone was hot. Right? So that's another thing to look for is that sort of relationship where it's this one massive discovery that happened 10 years ago but no one's ever heard of it, that sort of story. It's something to watch for that it's probably going to lead to a very romanticized version of the how and the why.
Yeah, and that's a good point that, A, that the hormone's only it's not linear. You can't just keep taking more of a hormone and just think it'll do more of whatever it is it's supposed to do. Your body it just doesn't work that way. There's thresholds where, you know, too much probably isn't great and too little probably isn't great. There's always seems to be always a sweet spot for almost all of them. And because then it'll throw off other hormones and everything else that it's supposed to be doing. So you can't be picturing any of your body, like the processes at the cellular level, hormones, neuroendocrine, like how your brain works. None of it's just just linear. Just more is better, or less is better, whichever direction you want that particular hormone to go, because you don't know what that's doing to another hormone or another system in the body. So it's
you pick any one hormone, no matter how evil or bad you think it is, and take it completely out of the body, you're either going to be very ill or die. Right? So they're that important in that regard. And you take the whatever hormone you think is possibly the most beneficial hormone out there, and then, you know, dose it 100-fold higher than whatever peak levels are, and you're probably going to be very ill and or die. It's just the way these things work. Right? I really like the analogy of the way our hormones interact in our physiology. It's like a spider web. Understanding they're all connected somehow. And if that spider web analogy, or at least that thought process, isn't present in this explanation of the how and why, then yeah, you know, it's just basically a romanticized version of the actual story.
Yeah, there's no point on a spider web that you can poke or touch without the rest of the web all moving a little bit. So that's just basically how your body works. And then the more you push on one end, the more all of it moves with it. So you just there's no getting around that. And that's evident by people who have to take drugs like on a long-term basis. They know that they know what they're taking their drug for, but they also know what the side effects are, and you can't really avoid them. I mean, pharmaceutical companies try to minimize the side effects as much as they can, but you just can't. So, I mean, this is pretty obvious to people who have to do this sort of thing. They just get it. They just see. And it even happens with it even happens on a quite literal level with injuries and like, for instance, if you injure a hip or a knee, you'll notice it throughout your whole body, like an asymmetry. It's like it's that whole, you know, the ankle bones connected to the knee bone thing. It's, you know, you can trace all of the changes in your movement right from wherever an injury is. So if you have like a weak shoulder or a shoulder you blew out, it'll show up in all different exercises you do because it's connected. So on the inside, you're drawing a very simple analogy. Your hormones and all of your internal processes, so to speak, are just as connected as all the joints and muscles in your body are.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, exactly. I think really when you get back to why, I mean, because anybody listening is probably wondering, well, you know, why is all this how and why out there? The main thing is, I think it's fear of three simple words, right? Because when people ask you things, especially if you're online being told, you know, you have to act like the expert in this area, no one wants to say, I don't know. Right, so someone asks you, you know, what works. You're like, oh well, you know, I eat less and I train more. And they're like, why? And you're like, well, because, you know, I ate less calories, I burnt some more, and I built some muscle. I'm like, well, how? And then instead of saying, I don't know, man, people like to say, that's when they go into the what they've heard and sort of their concept of what they think happens. And it's a big thing in online right now. I mean, in academia, typically, you know, you're good when you have no idea outside of your special area when you're aware that you don't know. But the seems like online and in books, I mean, everybody wants to be an expert in everything.
Oh, yeah. And well, and people don't buy answer. Like, you don't want to buy an answer of, well, that depends, or we don't know yet.
It depends, and I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Could you imagine, you pay for a product and all, or a solution to one of your problems, and all you get is a book that says, well, that depends, and we don't know yet. The thing is, I think people think science, you know, the human health sciences right now have way more answers than it does. I know I went through that. Throughout school and graduate school, I started realizing, man, I thought we had more of this figured out. It kind of seems like you do when you're younger, I guess. And then I guess the more we studied, I started realizing, oh man, we don't have that figured out yet either. We don't have that figured. There's just so many things. Science is chipping away at it, but it's just kind of, we just don't know as much as people wish we knew. But if you look through the popular press, I guess, and through, you know, just go to the bookstore, it seems like every answer is there. Like, I mean, you're going to be given every possible answer.
Well, you're going to be getting 10 or 15 answers for the same problem. That's the best part of it all, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. There's probably 35 books right now at the bookstore, like just down the street from you, that can tell you which is the exact best way to lose weight. But, you know, and all the hows and whys. And in science, it's just like, well, they're still trying to solve a bunch of stuff. So it's, they don't have all of the hows and whys figured out yet. In a lot of fields.
You know what's a great example of that is muscle growth. Right?
Oh, yeah, muscle growth. Yeah, but that's a perfect example.
The what, the how, the why, and we have sort of theories on each one, but if you try to actually look at the total body of research on like how muscles grow from resistance training, not like as you're growing up, turning into an adult, but from resistance training, there's very little research. Now, if you look at the research on the idea of protein synthesis or nitrogen retention, there's a nice amount of research. And if you look at even more research on mTOR or how the fibers and muscles act, there's a nice amount of research there. But they don't all fit together yet, right? There's no conclusive evidence showing that, you know, what we're doing to affect protein synthesis in a study has any long-term effects that might affect muscle growth. And we have conflicting evidence that these things like mTOR and all these protein signaling molecules people are so interested in, they don't seem to respond the way we would think either. So there's, again, going back to most likely because of this spiderweb-like relationship in our physiology, that as we're ramping up one thing, something else may be ramping down to compensate, right? So we just don't have the answers that we think we do. And that's where people have to kind of throw in new opinions and theories rather than just saying, we don't know yet.
Yeah. Well, it's because there's such a desire for it. Like, people want to know how to build muscle. And they have this unrealistic picture of how much muscle they think they can build. So people will sell them all kinds of solutions to it and give you all of these other stories of, like you said, protein synthesis and nitrogen retention and signaling pathways and all of that. And all of those might be part of the muscle building puzzle. It's just they may not.
Most likely, for sure.
Yeah, they're probably like peripheral pieces. You know, they're not like those aren't the piece that actually makes the picture look like how on the cover of the puzzle box. They might be pieces, like maybe more towards the corners, or I mean, they're all valuable to finally see the picture. You can't finish the puzzle without those pieces, I guess what I'm trying to say. But
right.
No one piece is the whole puzzle. It's just what it
and
is.
And that's where you get into the OCE sort of way of eating it and thinking about things, is if you start thinking that the one or two pieces you have is the puzzle, right? And instead of admitting that, okay, there's lots going on here.
Yeah, like,
as I'm ramping things up, things are ramping down, et cetera. But just the idea, okay, I've got it all figured out. That's when the OCE really comes in, because as you think you've got it all figured out, it's never going to work the way you think it is. So you just start layering more info on it.
Yeah, it's like you know, insulin has something to do with weight loss. So does growth hormone. So does, catecholamines.
Steroids.
Yeah, all of that stuff. All of those different things have something to do with it. But those are just individual pieces of the puzzle. Just staring at that one piece and like re-examining it and reading more books about that one piece of the puzzle doesn't help you build the whole puzzle. It just leaves you trapped looking at that one piece and wondering why you can't get this puzzle to come together while you're just constantly.
After 6 years of research, I've finally decided this is a corner piece, right?
You're like, okay, so put it in the corner and stop looking at it and start looking at everything else that goes with it. So it's
exactly.
It's just the human body's like a black box, and you have to picture the way research is done on it. Like the scientists have all the puzzle pieces, or at least they know that they're all like splashed out on a table, but they're in a dark room, and they also don't really have the picture on the box. So they're, and the dark room is an analogy for the however good their instrumentation and technology is today. So right now, like muscle building research is hard to do just because it's
the room is really dark.
It's hard to measure muscle growth. We don't have intricate or precise enough devices to measure muscle growth because it happens so slow. So we measure other things that are easier to measure only because we have devices to measure them. And even then, the accuracy of those devices still needs to be continually validated and updated. It's kind of like, I use this analogy, it's like before they knew what insulin was, they just knew there was something in your blood that did something to your blood sugar. And they just called it blood factor X. They didn't even know what it was. They didn't know it was a protein hormone. They didn't know it came from the pancreas. They just knew something was in there. So that's kind of like you've got a bunch of puzzle pieces. You're like, I know eventually they fit together into a picture, but I just don't know where the pieces go. And if someone would just turn the light on in the room, maybe I could start looking at the pieces. And that was when, you know, they got enough technology, the technology upgraded enough to actually be able to analyze what a protein hormone was and start looking at smaller and smaller levels. And then eventually they're like, oh, it's a hormone. Oh, it comes from the pancreas. Oh, it attaches to muscle and liver cells and fat cells. And then they're like, oh, I get it now. That's what that thing does.
Right.
Pardon me?
Let's do a take home from this. I get the coffee's getting cold and I got to wrap it up.
Oh, we got to wrap it up. Okay, so what's
basic
our
thing is, okay, you see a factoid, right? Like insulin does this or growth hormone does X, testosterone does Y. Always remind yourself that it's just one piece of the puzzle. So you're like, you can ask yourself what else is happening, what happens next, et cetera, right? Because you just know that whatever you're reading in a newspaper or a magazine or a book, even a scientific research study, is just one very small piece of the puzzle. So that's point one. Point two is if the story is, like, captivating, you know, if it's really built up, there's a cool plot, and there's definite hormones or physiological systems that are being portrayed as good guys and bad guys, you know, the story's been romanticized to make it a story. That would be point two. Point three is that they're, you know, if they're relying too much on the one hero or the one villain, again, you should be asking yourself, okay, what else is happening? What else is in play? What are they forgetting? And then, I guess, lastly, if they're making a direct statement, always ask yourself, can I think of situations in the world where this isn't necessarily true? Or I can think of evidence where this, the contrary might have happened.
Yeah.
And that's how you're going to avoid the OCE of falling for too much how and why stuff.
Yeah, I can agree with that more. If you can see this thing happening somewhere else without their specific method of how or why, then obviously you know their how and their why isn't 100% accurate.
Exactly.
And I mean,
doing all that is just erasing. And if it doesn't fit together, you just have to sort of let it go. Because remember, it's an information clutter that we're trying to avoid, right? So part of the PHI life, which is just keeping things simple, is if it's clutter, if it was a tidbit of info that you saw one time that doesn't really make sense, you have to sort of just remove it from the pile of useful info in your head.
Right. And I guess the fifth thing I would add is don't always make the assumption, and I know this will be difficult, but don't always make the assumption that the answer is an addition of something more. It doesn't always have to be a new technique, a new piece of information, you don't need to add more to your life to necessarily progress. There's, in some cases, and especially with your body, we've gotten to the, and with information, removing something might actually be better, or going backwards a bit and shedding some skin and decluttering.
Yep, perfect. And then I guess in closing remarks, just remember it's all related, right?
Yep. When it comes to your body and your life, it all has to fit together, and everything affects everything else.
Exactly. All right. I'm done with my coffee, and I'm going to get back on the road.
All right. Sounds good. So for Brad Pelon, I'm John Barbin, and this is your PHI Life podcast.